Greetings, this is podcast number 25 of Blast the Right. I'm Jack Clark from therationalradical.com, www.therationalradical.com. Today's one of those podcasts with one big segment. We'll discuss how Bush's IRS, in typical right-wing fashion, is escalating its harassment of the working poor. I think it will get you real angry. As usual, music credits will be at the end. Let's get right into it. A recent story didn't make headlines, and you probably didn't even see it. But it got me real angry, especially because it reminded me about an entire string of related stories I've blogged about over the years. Let me tell you all about it, and we can use this to illustrate what the right wing is all about. First thing is, you've got to understand what the earned income tax credit is. It was started in 1975, and what it does is, for low-income families, it refunds Social Security taxes and also provides an additional credit based on their earnings. It's all designed to encourage work. $35,000 is the yearly income cutoff point. How much credits are involved vary according to income and family size. For households with children, in 2001, the average tax credit was about $2,000. Now, for all these decades that the program has been in existence, it's enjoyed bipartisan support because of its powerful effect of lifting people out of poverty. In fact, the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities reports that, quote, census data show that in 2003, the EITC lifted 4.4 million people out of poverty, including 2.4 million children. Census data show that the EITC lifts more children out of poverty than any other single program, close quote. So this is a good thing. In fact, it seems almost too good to be true, something that actually helps the poor. Well, maybe it was too good to be true. At least once the right-wingers took over the federal government under Bush. And here's where we get into a little bit of the history leading up to the recent story I just read that got me so angry. Back in the spring of 2002, the New York Times had a series of articles. It reported that the IRS was focusing its audit efforts, was looking for cheating much more intensively among wage workers than among those whose income comes from businesses and investments. That's even though those who earn their income from businesses and investments have far greater opportunity to cheat than wage earners. And of course, they make a lot more. In fact, the working poor were being audited far more often than high-income taxpayers. For example, 1 in 47 people who claimed the earned income tax credit were audited, but only 1 in 127 taxpayers making more than $100,000. They were auditing low-income people at three times the rate as people who made more than $100,000. Even worse, the IRS was only auditing 1 in 400 partnerships. Those are primarily owned by the wealthy. So low-income, earned income tax credit people were being audited at a rate 10 times higher than the wealthy who had partnerships. Very nice. The IRS's own estimates showed that the maximum amount of money lost from earned income tax credits that weren't supposed to be paid was $10 billion a year. In contrast, estimates of lost tax income from other failures to pay added up to $248 billion, yet the IRS was scaling back enforcement efforts in those areas. At that time, the IRS commissioner was Charles Rosati. He was Bill Clinton's appointee. He admitted that criticism of the way they were conducting their audits was valid, and he said he had been working on the problem for a long time and had a plan to change it. They said they would ease up on examining ordinary wage earners, and they would devote more of their attention to wealthy taxpayers, those who may be cheating through businesses, partnerships, investments, and offshore accounts. That sounds right. That's the way it should be. Now, it's kind of disturbing that this trend of letting the big fish swim away with no scrutiny and focusing on the little fry, it's kind of disturbing that this was going on under Clinton. But at least his commissioner said that he recognized the problem and had a plan to change it. Unfortunately, right after Rosati announced this policy, his term ended, and then Bush got to appoint a new IRS commissioner. So guess what happened when Bush's IRS commissioner took over? Just what you would expect, just what you would expect from the right-wingers, a bash the poor policy. That's right. In April of 2003, the New York Times reported, quote, "The Internal Revenue Service is planning to ask more than 4 million of the working poor who now claim a special tax credit to provide the most exhaustive proof of eligibility ever demanded of any class of taxpayers." Close quote. That special tax credit that the New York Times referred to in its lead paragraph is the earned income tax credit. So the working poor, not the wealthy, not the middle class, but the working poor, they're going to have to provide the, quote, "most exhaustive proof of eligibility ever demanded of any class of taxpayers," closed quote. Simply amazing and disgusting. This IRS move immediately prompted a barrage of criticism. The article went on, quote, "Some tax experts criticized the higher burden of proof as unfair and a wasteful allocation of scarce IRS enforcement dollars. They say that corporations, business owners, investors, and partnerships deprive the government of many times what the working poor ever could. Yet these taxpayers face no demands to prove the validity of their claims in advance with certified records and sworn affidavits," close quote. Do you sense a double standard here? And what's this with certified records and sworn affidavits? Yes, the working poor taxpayers have to produce them before they get a refund, unlike virtually everyone else. What's the real purpose of these rules? Let me read you a terrific letter to the editor that appeared in the New York Times in response to this article. Quote, "As a volunteer tax preparer, I have directly interacted with hundreds of low-income taxpayers who are eligible for the earned income tax credit. I have met their children and heard their stories. It is outrageous that this segment of the population is being unfairly singled out for humiliating investigations. Why doesn't the Internal Revenue Service require proof of eligibility from all those claiming a dependent? How about requiring everyone claiming deductible charitable donations to submit appropriate documentation to the IRS in advance? Or records of cost basis for capital gains and losses? Are the working poor targets because, in their daily struggle to survive, they are too busy to put up a fight? Or is it because they cannot afford fancy lawyers to defend them? Long live compassionate conservatism. Close quote. That letter writer hit the nail on the head. The purpose is to cut down the number of people who get the credit. As the Times put it, the IRS rules will, quote, set a standard of proof so high that it will be difficult and in some cases impossible for honest taxpayers to meet it. As a result, some people entitled to the tax credit will no longer receive it, and those who do manage to file successful claims will almost certainly have to pay commercial tax preparers more for helping them with the extra paperwork. Close quote. In other words, some taxpayers will become frustrated and just not file for it, and the ones that do are going to wind up spending a good hunk of what they're going to get back on the commercial tax preparer so they can file it properly. Now let's fast forward to the year 2005. Remember Rosati, Charles Rosati, the IRS commissioner that Clinton had appointed and that said such IRS practices had to be reversed? He came out with a book, and he condemns these practices in no uncertain terms. He said the agency is, quote, like a police department that was giving out lots of parking tickets while organized crime was running rampant, close quote. He also said that the IRS, quote, picks on the little guy, close quote, over relatively small amounts of money while, quote, largely overlooking an ocean of money hidden in business entities, close quote. He saw that the IRS under Bush was not appropriately changing its ways. But it gets even worse. Okay, they're going to impose burdensome requirements on the least of these, the most vulnerable, the least able to complain members of our society, the working poor. But at least enforce these burdensome requirements in a fair way, if you know what I mean. Don't violate people's rights when you do so. But of course, the Bushians did so. And now we're up to this story from last week that got me real angry. At this point, I think we'll take a little intermission. It's been suggested to me that during long segments, especially when there's just one long segment in the entire podcast, that I break it up with some music. So I'll do that now, for about a minute. We'll hear some mood music, so to speak.
In my line of work, you gotta keep repeating things over and over and over again to kind of catapult the propaganda. Catapult the propaganda. Catapult the propaganda.
Chief Records Inspector Charles Dolfer has now issued a comprehensive report that confirms the earlier conclusion of David Kaye that Iraq did not have the weapons that our intelligence believed were there.
It turned out that we have not found any stockpiles. I think it's unlikely that we will find any stockpiles.
I don't know anybody in any government or any intelligence agency who suggested that the Iraqis had nuclear weapons. That's fact number one.
What has not stood the test of time was the judgment we made that there were stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons.
Okay, so as I was saying, this brings us to the point where I'll talk about the article I read last week that got me so angry. The New York Times reported that, quote, tax refunds sought by 1.6 million poor Americans over the last 5 years were frozen and their returns labeled fraudulent, although the vast majority appear to have done nothing wrong, the Internal Revenue Service's taxpayer advocate told Congress yesterday. A computer program identified the refund requests as suspect and automatically flagged the taxpayers for extra scrutiny for years to come, the advocate said in her annual report to Congress. These taxpayers were not told that the IRS Criminal Investigation Division suspected fraud. Close quote. Now, who are these people who are suspected of fraud and that the IRS is hitting with a strong, huge iron hammer? The taxpayer advocate said that the average reported income among them was $13,000. And the refund due was about $3,500. These are people way, way, way below the poverty line. And this refund is the difference between them being able to pay their bills or not. Okay, you may say, yeah, but they're committing fraud. Are they? Listen to this. Quote, as for the suspected fraud in refund requests, Ms. Olson said her staff sampled the suspect returns and found that 66% were entitled to the amount sought or more. Another 14% were due a partial refund. She expressed doubt that many among the remaining 20% had committed fraud, close quote. Not only is the IRS erroneously labeling as fraudulent all these tax returns of the working poor, but they're doing so in a high-handed and maybe even illegal manner. That's because the taxpayer is not notified that the IRS suspects fraud. So unless the taxpayer takes the initiative and presses for their refund, they won't have, as the advocate put it, quote, an opportunity to substantiate their claims or to show that any overclaims identified were due to honest error rather than fraud, close quote. She concluded, quote, at a minimum, this procedure constitutes an extraordinary violation of fundamental taxpayer rights and fairness, closed quote, and that it, quote, may also constitute a violation of due process of law, close quote. And who is this outrage being committed against? The rich? The middle class? No, against the working poor. Even Senator Charles Grassley, who's the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee and a Republican from Iowa, said, quote, I'm concerned by the advocate's findings that thousands and thousands of taxpayers are having their refunds frozen by the Criminal Investigation Division, yet the taxpayers often do not know their refund has been frozen and can't effectively challenge the IRS's actions, close quote. It's like with Bush's warrantless wiretaps. The Bushians just go so far that even Republicans in Congress have to be critical of them. Here, the right-wing Bushian abuse of the working poor also makes Republicans in Congress cringe. As a New York Times editorial put it a couple of years ago, quote, if the IRS wants to harass the poor and undermine a key incentive for taking low-wage jobs, it should keep doing what it is doing, close quote. Harassing the poor, that's just what's going on. So there you have it, an escalation of abuse against the working poor. Disproportionate unfair audit scrutiny. Unprecedented documentation requirements beforehand, erroneous designation as criminals, unwarranted freezing of their refunds, and not even telling them about the criminal designation or the refund freeze. It's just like right-wingers trying to squeeze blood from a stone. Kick the working poor while they're down. Kick them hard. Kick them over and over and over and over again. You're a right winger. That's what you were born to do. Warning to the listener with sensitive ears. Right winger voice imminent.
No, they're poor. They're powerless. Let's keep their tax refund. And then we can afford more tax cuts for us. We deserve it. We work hard.
And let's be clear about this. This earned income tax credit is not a handout or charity or something they don't deserve. Quite the contrary. The truth is that the working poor subsidize us, the rest of us. This is how Barbara Ehrenreich put it in her book Nickel and Dimed. Quote, when someone works for less than she can live on, when, for example, she goes hungry so you can eat more cheaply and conveniently, then she has made a great sacrifice for you. She has made you a gift of some part of her abilities, her health, and her life. The working poor, as they are approvingly termed, are in fact the major philanthropists of our society. They neglect their own children so that the children of others will be cared for. They live in substandard housing so that other homes will be shiny and perfect. They endure privation so that inflation will be low and stock prices high. To be a member of the working poor is to be an anonymous donor, a nameless benefactor to everyone else. Close quote. This trying to beat the poor out of their tax refunds, it really disgusts me. The richest 10% of Americans own 70% of the wealth of the country. That's according to U.S. government statistics. The richest 10% of Americans own 70% of all the wealth. Now, certainly some of them are content, don't want to gouge the poor, and are happy to pay their fair share of taxes. But what about the right-wingers? Not them. How much more do they want than 70%? Do they want 80%? 90%? How about 95%? Well, why not 100%? Everyone can just give all the wealth of the nation to them, and they can be like feudal lords, and the rest of us can subsist on whatever they will deign to give out in their generosity towards the serfs. I sometimes remark that right-wingers have the psychological characteristics of serial killers. That is, no empathy at all for those around them, no empathy at all for anybody else, and they enjoy causing human suffering and death. Listen to podcast number 2 for my whole spiel on this. Now, on my blog, which is on the podcast homepage, some comments were that I paint with too broad a brush, and that many right-wingers are nice people and give to charity. Well, I stand by my analysis. If you help a few people here and there with charity, and then support policies that harm millions and cause human suffering and death, and you know that's going to happen, your personal acts of charity are wiped out in the balance, in the moral calculus of your life's actions. All the excuses that right-wingers make for their policies. Well, the best way I can put it is to repeat what noted economist John Kenneth Galbraith said. This is one of my favorites. Quote, the modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy, that is, the search for a superior moral justification for selfishness. Close quote. And you know what? It's more than a psychological affliction, this unbridled greed of the right wing. It's a literal spiritual evil. Right wingers, especially those who claim to be of the Christian persuasion, rant and rave about our Judeo-Christian tradition and how they're upholding it. Oh yeah? Here's a short passage from part of the Judeo part of that tradition, from the prophet Jeremiah. And remember, as an ancient biblical prophet, Jeremiah is speaking the word of God. Quote, woe to him who builds his house by unrighteousness and his upper rooms by injustice, who makes his neighbor serve him for nothing and does not give him his wages. End of passage. Jeremiah is referring to a king who used the forced labor of his own citizens to build a luxurious palace and then didn't even pay them for their work. Getting the connection? What did Ehrenreich say? The working poor work for less than a living wage to subsidize the palaces of the rest of us. And then the Bush IRS doesn't even want to give him the money that's due them. What about the Christian side of the Judeo-Christian tradition that right-wingers are always saying they uphold so well? Those of you who've listened to this podcast for any length of time know what I'm going to say about that. I'm going to refer to the parable of the sheep and the goats contained in Matthew 25. That's where Jesus made it quite clear how we are to interact with our fellow humans. If you're interested in listening to entire podcast segments on this subject, check out podcasts number 9 and 10. The parable of the sheep and the goat says that on Judgment Day, Jesus will gather the nations, and on one side he will put the sheep and the other side the goats. He will tell the sheep that they are going to heaven, because when he was hungry they fed him, and when he was thirsty they gave him to drink, and when he was naked they clothed him, and when he was sick they visited him. The sheep then ask, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed thee, or thirsty and give thee drink, or naked and clothe thee, or sick and visit thee?" And Jesus said, "As you did it unto the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me." In other words, how you treat the least of these, the poor, hungry, sick, naked, thirsty, is how you treat Jesus himself. Jesus then turned to the goats and told them they were going to hell. He told them it was because when he was hungry, they did not feed him. When he was thirsty, they did not give him to drink. When he was naked, they did not clothe him. And when he was sick, they did not visit him. And the goats ask, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and naked and sick and thirsty and not minister to thee?" And Jesus replied, "As you did it not unto the least of these, my brethren, you did it not unto me." Right-wingers, is the shoe beginning to fit? Right-wingers want to destroy the entire social safety net. Bush had his plan to destroy Social Security under the guise of adding on personal accounts. The earned income tax credit is part of the social safety net. Is not the right-winger plan to cripple the earned income tax credit, if not to destroy it altogether, if they ever got the power in Congress to do so? Listen to Rush Limbaugh, head cheerleader for the right wing, gleefully proclaim Roosevelt is dead. Of course, Roosevelt being the president who set up the social safety net way back in the 30s.
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
That's right, Rush. You admit to us that the right wing wants to destroy the social safety net. These onerous, unfair, perhaps illegal requirements imposed on the working poor regarding the earned income tax credit, that's just part of the effort. I say to you, Mr. and Ms. Right-Winger, even if you give a few dollars to charity, the crumbs off your financial banquet table, if at the same time millions suffer because of the policies of those you put in power, sorry, You're violating Matthew 25 in the worst way. You're violating all bounds of common human decency. Which, of course, means you're adhering fully to the right-wing credo. Well, that'll about wrap it up for today. If you liked what you heard, please tell a friend. If they don't know about podcasting, turn them on to podcasting. Or just let them sign up in the FeedBlitz box on the podcast main homepage, and they'll be notified by email of each new podcast posting. I love to hear your comments, so please feel free to email me. My address is rational@adelphia.net. Also, you can call in now and leave comments for me to play on the podcast. If you're using Skype, my Skype name is Jack from Blast the Right. If you're not using Skype, you can just call in the following number from any phone and leave a message. 310-933-5891. 310-933-5891. Music credits. We opened with L.A. Nightmare by 22 Caliber. You can find them on music.podshow.com. The intermission was Catapult the Propaganda by Nise Music, NISEmusic.com. We'll close the podcast with a little bit of Taking My Country Back by Honky Tonkers for Truth. Links to that song, as well as to all the other music played on the Blast the Right podcast, can be found on my music resources page, which is linked to off the main podcast homepage. In addition, links to the data resources I use in the podcast can be found on my data resources page, which is also linked to off the main podcast homepage. So, until next time, I'll sign off and say I love you all, including all you right-wing pieces of crap.
We had a bundle in the treasury drawer, more than there had ever been before. But every day we're drowning deeper in debt. Maybe 4 years should be all you get. Then you gave tax breaks to the millionaires, and you tried to make the working man pay. You can't tax a man when his job's not there. Now look at where we are today. Hey, I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating me.